Chapter 18. "Are you two sitting in the dark?" Django asks, annoyed, and shoves the door to the storeroom open with a hard shove. John winces at the sudden spill of light, putting a hand up to shield his eyes as Django clomps in, extra noisy in his boots and obviously exaggerating it. What the hell? Like a Nexu, Arla lunges, and she hits Django around the knees, slams him back into the wall as John goes skittering sideways, and then hauls him down. "Django," she snaps. "You sound like a bantha, carking hells." Django struggles against the arm she has locked around his throat, grabbing with his elbows and making her armor clang. "Criff, get off of me. We should have left you on the moon. You're so lucky that you're not hurt anymore, because now I'm going to hurt you." John ducks his head and puts a hand up, hiding his laughter as they wrestle. Django's dramatic entrance would be a lot more disconcerting if John hadn't been able to feel him lurking outside the room for the last hour, though, carefully keeping watch. And, in light of that, it's easy to see that neither of them are fighting as hard as they could if they were truly angry. And then, light, a boot nudges John's thigh. He looks up to find Django watching him, still pinned by Arla with one of her arms around his neck. "Hey," Django says gruffly. "Those Jedi, you didn't tell them about Jaster." "I don't think they need John to tell them that the Mandalore exists," Arla says, but when Django bangs his elbow back against her armor, she huffs and lets him go. Django slants her a dark look, but sinks down between her and John, stretching one leg out. "Not about him, about marrying him. That Jedi who healed me had no idea." That makes Arla pause, and she looks from Django to John, expression thoughtful. John kind of wants to shrink back in his hood under the weight of her stare. "Neither did the Boffin, but if you'd told either of them before the wedding even happened, they might have helped you find some way to get out of it." John winces, looking down at his hands. And it might be true. Even with the life debt, Noel or Faye may have been able to think of a way to remove Jaster's hold over him. But that doesn't change the fact that John is precisely where he's meant to be. It doesn't alter the fact that the universe changes with Jaster, Django, and Arla, the three of them shatterpoints in a way John can't fully grasp. "I gave Jaster my word," he says softly, "and they might not have approved." Arla finishes, still watching him. John nods, and a second later, Django grunts. "It's a life debt," he tells Arla, elbowing her again. "Don't argue against it." "I'm not," Arla protests, thumping him back. "Did you calm the nearest outpost about Tor?" Django scoffs. "Of course I did. They're sending scouts, but with the attack yesterday, no one wants to risk an outright assault and leave themselves open to more hits." Arla grimaces, thunking her head back against the wall. "Bastard," she mutters, and when Django makes a sound of offense, she scuffs his hair and makes him swear at her. "Not you, Tor. As soon as he realized there was something happening, he bolted." For a moment, John considers what he can add. Then, quiet, he offers, "The building where they were holding Noel. I don't think the defenses were fully set up yet. Master Fey and I, we listen to the Force more than the Council. Tor can't have known we would find her so quickly." Arla snorts. "That sounds like Tor," she says, and it's vicious around the edges, but mostly just tired. "Solid plans, but he's too stupid to get them to work." Reaching out, Django curls an arm around her shoulders, hauls her in, and Arla settles against his shoulder with a sigh. Django kisses her hair, then closes his eyes and says, "We found him. We'll find him again. And next time, I'm going to have my fracking sniper rifle, and then we'll see how it all plays out." John smiles a little, turning his eyes towards the open door. The hum of the engines in hyperspace is comforting, familiar, but he misses Jaster. It's startling to realize, but John wants to see him, wants to be close enough to touch. Jaster avoiding him since the kiss is one thing, because then at least John can still feel him close by. But being systems away is a little lonely, even with Arla and Django right next to him. Not to the point that John can't function, not to the point that he's distracted, but if he had the choice of where to be, he would pick back with Jaster, his questions and his kindness, and not regret it. And then, into the peaceful silence, Arla says, "Tor's moving the Darksaber." Instantly, Django stiffens. "The Darksaber was on that moon," he demands. "I don't know," Arla says with a grimace. "Maybe he was trying to get it out of there as soon as things went south, or maybe it's somewhere else. He didn't say. But he did mention a ship called the Omen, and trying to keep it out of sight, so that no one can challenge him for it and win." "Hatoon," Django mutters, like the insult burns his mouth. He scowls at the far wall, then takes a breath and says, "If we get that carking sword..." "I know." Arla doesn't move, just reaches out and tangles her fingers with Django's. "Take that away from Tor, and everyone will see that Jaster's the rightful Mandalore." "They should have done that when Tor started burning settlements and murdering people who were trying to stay out of things," Django mutters, and takes a breath. "It could be a trap. He could have known that you were listening." "He didn't," John says quietly, and when both of them look at him, he tips one shoulder in a shrug. Unless he can guard his thoughts from a Jedi, he didn't know. Arla tips her head to look at Django, and Django looks back for a long second. "The Omen," he repeats. Arla's smirk is thin, vicious. "I bet we can find it if we check the nearby ports." "It could still be a trap." "It won't be a trap if we blow it out of the sky." John hesitates, thinking of Tor's words, of what Arla told him about the Darksaber, what he knows of it. The Omen will have fighters, cannons, a whole crew, and likely extra guards as well, but... "Or," he says, soft, and feels Django and Arla's attention snap to him. "We find out where it went, and then take the Darksaber." There's a moment of silence as Arla weighs the idea, and then she sits up, frowning faintly. "Wait for them to think they've got it safe and hidden, and then break into whatever vault it's in," she says, like she's testing the idea out. "It will be well guarded." "I'm good at getting into places," John says. "I can find us a way in." Django huffs, but raises his comm, types out a message. "I'll get Silas to start looking for any ships with that name making port," he says. "Quietly. Someone must have seen it, if he's got a whole wing of fighters around it. Tor wouldn't use a ship directly connected to him either." "Someone will talk," Arla says, grimly amused. "And if we give them a few days, that means we don't have to risk missing the wedding. I think Miles would blow a transistor. And Jaster gets broody when Tor and the Darksaber come up, so we'll just wait to tell him until we're sure." There's a long, long moment of silence, a growing thread of dread. John blinks, startled to feel it, and glances over at Django, who's staring at his comm like it's a blaster pressed against his skull. "Django?" he asks. Django winces. "Miles might not have any transistors left to blow. He and Jaster just found out we're gone." "Criff," Arla mutters, and she winces too. "It hasn't even been 14 hours. Silas didn't even try to cover." "They thought we'd been kidnapped," Django says in disbelief. "That paranoid old man." John hides his amusement. "Tell them it was Jedi business," he offers, "because that, at least, should clear Silas of blame. Maybe even Django and Arla, potentially." "Throw you under the speeder?" Django asks, raising a brow at him. "Sure, why not?" "As our stepfather, I think it's your duty to take the fall," Arla says airily. And when John and Django both grimace, she laughs wickedly. "We should call you Bweer." "No," Django says loudly. "We shouldn't." Arla laughs, unrepentant, but thumps Django on the shoulder. "Go on, tell them it was John who dragged us away into the wilds. How far out are we?" "Minutes," Django mutters unhappily. 7, maybe. We just passed the star, and Conquered Dawn is in the third orbit." "Ugh," Arla mutters. At least Jaster can't put us on grunt work anymore. He'll probably try, Django counters, and Arla pulls a face that's entirely disgruntled agreement. Miles will have to go easy on us, she says. The wedding's in 3 days, and he still needs us to help to pull it off. Django's skeptical silence says everything. With a groan, Arla thumps her head against the wall, then says, I see you smirking, JT. From Bweer to JT, John asks, raising his hand to hide his smile. Arla pulls a face at him, just as Django does the same, and John swallows both his laughter and the urge to tell them that they look identical when they do that. I know, she says. We'll steal John's shirt and send him out first. That will distract Jaster. John flushes, but he rolls his eyes, pushes to his knees. I can distract him, he says. Jaster won't take disobedience the way Dark Woman might have. John knows that, deep in his bones. There's still a faint shiver of wariness, buried in his chest, but logic can cut through the emotion, the instinct to doubt. Even if Jaster is angry, he won't lash out. He isn't the type. A striptease would probably work, Arla says wickedly, and John goes red, jerking his hood up to hide his face. It wouldn't, and he knows that, because Jaster was spooked by just a kiss, but now there's an image in his head, and John has never felt comfortable in his own scarred skin, has never quite known what to do with his own body outside of missions or a fight, but that, well, it's a thought. And John won't do it, but he can think about it, imagine Jaster responding in a way he likely wouldn't, and it just feels good for a moment. I, Django says, shoving to his feet, am going to crash us into the ground. Arla scrambles up after him, throwing herself towards the doorway as he bolts for the bridge. Django, don't you dare! This is my ship! Still flushed, still a little warm under the collar, John lets them go, getting to his feet much more slowly and making his way towards the ramp instead. Beneath his feet, the hum of the engines changes pitch, and there's a shift. John closes his eyes, feeling the approach of the planet, the hum of millions of lives in the Force, the familiar light of Jaster's presence. It's nothing like Faye's, isn't unique, isn't vast the way she is. It's just human and steady and warm. And in that moment, John thinks he could find it no matter where in the galaxy he was. The ship settles with a thrum of engines cutting out, and a moment later, the ramp creaks down, flooding the hold with sunlight. They're at the edges of the compound, near the trees, and John can feel people approaching quickly, worry and anger and fear delayed. He starts down the ramp, and just as his feet fall on solid ground, Jaster appears around the edge of another ship, his hair mussed, the top few buttons of his shirt still undone. He takes one look at John and slows, relief flickering over his face. John, he says, what in the name of all of Corellia's hells were you three doing? A Jedi was captured by the Death Watch, John says, and Jaster stops dead. John watches the alarm settle into sharp assessment and can't help but step forward towards him. I felt it and traced them to one of Gargan II's moons. Arla and Django came to help when I wouldn't wait. After a long second, Jaster takes a breath. You're all right, he asks, and John nods, takes another step. When Jaster reaches for him, automatic, like he can't even help himself, John catches his fingers, lets himself be dragged in and wrapped up in Jaster's arms, and this is what he missed. This is what he wanted. Sinking into Jaster's hold, he ducks his head, lets Jaster tug his hood down and press his face into his hair, and lets all of the remaining tension of the rescue, and then Arla's pain and his own memories, slide away. I'm glad you're safe, Jaster murmurs, right against his ear. I was worried. The Force called me, John says simply. I needed to go, so I went. Jaster pauses for a long moment, like something about this is a surprise. Then, all at once, some of the stiffness eases, and he laughs, wraps his arms tighter around John, and presses their temples together. The Force, I see. and you would weight that over your husband. John blinks, because it's not an accusation. If anything, there's relief in Jaster's voice. You were all right without me, he says. Master Venari wasn't. Jaster chuckles, pulling back, and he raises a hand like he's going to touch John's cheek, only to pause. John doesn't let him waver for too long, though. He reaches up, catches Jaster's hand, and twines their fingers together, then pulls it down, and Jaster's breath is long and slow as he cups John's cheek, strokes his thumb across his scars. I'm glad you've returned, John, he says softly. John swallows, looking at him. Jaster's eyes are dark, the line of his mouth something soft, and John missed him, wants to kiss him. He starts, because this time, if he asks first, maybe Jaster won't run from the kiss. But before he can get so much as another word out, there's a rattle, a crash, a yelp, and Django staggers down the ramp like someone shoved him hard from behind. Django, Jaster says, and in an instant he's gone, hurrying to catch Django by the arm. You are hurt, and I cannot believe you are reckless enough to. I'm fine, Django protests. The Jedi was a healer, but Arla pushed me. I tripped you, Arla corrects, and leaps down the ramp, smirking. Because you weren't fast enough to dodge. Jaster makes a sound of deep aggravation, drags them both in like he's going for an embrace, and then promptly thumps their skulls together. Then, over the loud twin protests, he finally hugs them, an arm tight around each of his children. You two, he says, are aiming to give me heart failure before my wedding. Next time, tell me. You were busy sulking, Arla says, unrepentant. Moping, Django agrees, and Jaster sighs and thumps their heads together again. It was rather spectacular moping, Miles agrees dryly, pausing beside John. He looks John over, then says, The Death Watch is capturing Jedi now. A trap, John says. We tripped it early. Miles's breath is long and slow. Well, hopefully it will take him a few days to put the next one together. He eyes John sideways, then looks at Jaster and says, Be kind to Jaster. I gave him a hard time last night. And try to sneak in a visit with the armorer. She's done with your Vambrace. Thank you, John says quietly, and Miles casts him a crooked smile. Thank you for coming back, he counters. I thought you'd run off, and Arla and Django went to get you back. Jaster's still in danger. I wouldn't, John says. And it's not a protest, just a fact. Jaster is important to everything, and he's under threat. And John doesn't want to leave for any reason, but he particularly wouldn't leave knowing that. Miles's sideways glance is entirely unreadable, but he tilts his head, accepting that, and then steps forward. Jaster, leave their heads in one piece, he says, pitch to Carrie. I want to know everything they saw in the Death Watch base. John hides his smile as Miles reaches out to grab Arla by the jetpack and Django by the collar, and Jaster instantly lets them go, apparently quite willing to surrender them to Miles's care. Arla makes a sound of indignation, trying to bat his hand away, and says, John, you were there too. It was Jedi business. Miles wouldn't want to know, John says placidly, and Django snarls at him as he's hauled away, while Arla shoots him a look of deep and mounting betrayal. John puts a hand up to hide his grin, ducking his head a little, and catches a flicker of movement out of the corner of one eye. He twitches, jerks to the side entirely on instinct, and Jaster freezes with his hand still raised. Oh, John says, and swallows. His heart is racing, and he curls his fingers into fists, takes a careful breath. Talking with Arla, it may have brought up memories. Not the same as Tor, but... Oh, Jaster echoes, and steps back, deliberately putting space between them. The humor and relief that wound through him before are fading away, and John wants to call them back, wants to reach for him, but he doesn't quite know how to cross the sudden open space. And then, quietly, Jaster takes a breath, casts a glance around them. The area is clear, no one near enough to hear them, and Jaster tips his chin up like he's preparing to take a blow and says, John, I am fully aware that in this situation, I hold absolutely no moral high ground, given what I'm forcing you to do, and that your doubt is nothing but natural, but please know that there is nothing in me that could physically assault you, regardless of circumstances. John pauses, halfway certain that he heard those words wrong. Assault me, he repeats, bewildered. Jaster wouldn't. He already knows that. Jaster looks pained, and he rubs a hand over his face. You flinch, he says quietly, without looking at John. As if you expect me to hit you. Oh, John thinks, and swallows again, something cold settling into his belly. He wonders if it's that noticeable. He supposes he hasn't ever been around other people long enough for them to notice before. Even Madame New, on his few returns to Coruscant as a Padawan, was more distracted by the books he brought than anything, focused entirely on her work. John had liked it that way. It let him slide back into the shadows, deal with Coruscant's overwhelming press through silence and meditation, and finding space to breathe. She was the only one who would have noticed, aside from a handful of masters Dark Woman worked with briefly on missions that needed more hands. But if Jaster noticed, everything suddenly makes more sense. His reactions to different moments are suddenly logical, more reasonable, including his reaction to the kiss yesterday. Jaster took Arla in. After Tor, after she tried to kill him, he took her in and made her his daughter, and he loves her. He understands. Not you, he gets out, and the words stick in his mouth, don't want to come off his tongue. Across from him, Jaster stills, but John can't look at him, can't bring himself to. It's, you're not the one I expect to. There's a second of perfect, absolute silence. Then, rough, a curse, and hands catch John's elbows, pull him in. The confession hurts, like it burned his throat on the way out, and John curls in, buries his face in Jaster's shoulder as Jaster's arms wrap around him. He shivers, but it feels better to have said it, to have it there between them in the open. No need for names, and Jaster isn't asking, which John is immensely grateful for, but it's there. It's been said, and now Jaster can't take the wrong meaning, can't blame himself. Now John doesn't have to worry about him noticing in the future, because he knows. Forgive me, Jaster says quietly in John's ear. I was too focused on myself. Is it sudden movements? John breathes in, breathes out. Jaster is warm, like the sunlight on the riverbank the other day, and his arms are tight, unwavering. Just near my face sometimes, he says, and it's frustrating that he can't give a better answer. I don't... Jaster makes a quiet sound of acknowledgement, slides a hand through his tangled hair. Minds are complicated things, he says quietly, and sometimes the past is more present than other times. If you flinch, would you like space afterwards? Without raising his head, John makes a sound of denial. He twists his fingers into Jaster's shirt, breathes in the sweat and metal scent of him, and shakes his head. It helps, the reminder that you're the present. Something turns, unsettled, in his belly, and he says, I'm all right. It's just movement sometimes. It takes me by surprise. Jaster hums, the stroke of his hand through John's hair never faltering. Yes, he agrees. I see that now. I thought... He huffs, amusement that's all self-directed, and trails off. John breathes in, breathes out, and smiles a little. I knew you were avoiding me, he says. This is why. Gently, Jaster tugs on a lock of his hair. Yes, well, trapping you in a marriage with a man you thought would hit you seemed a very good reason to wallow in self-loathing, he says dryly, and his arms tighten faintly. The breath he lets out is a little rough, a little wry, and his hand settles over the nape of John's neck, just tight enough to feel. It makes John want to shiver, makes him entirely, vividly aware of Jaster's calluses and the strength in his hands. But clearly, you feel no hesitation going herring off to another system to follow the Force. Maybe I shouldn't have worried quite so much. Trapping him in marriage. John feels a flicker of amusement despite himself, and he raises his head, meets Jaster's eyes. "Jaster," he says, "you always told me I could leave." Jaster pauses, like he's been caught off guard, but his eyes don't waver from John's face. "To a degree," he says, careful, and something in his expression twists. "But regardless of your feelings, I would put your name beside mine and make the marriage official." John can't help it. He snorts, reaching up to brush the tips of his fingers over Jaster's cheek in a moment of boldness. Stubble scrapes his skin, makes him hyper-aware of the touch, and Jaster closes his eyes, leans into it. John's mouth feels dry, his heartbeat too quick, but he doesn't pull away. "Jaster," he says, "I hardly contact the Jedi Temple, let alone anyone else. A word beside my name on a certificate that I would never look at wouldn't mean anything to me." There's a startled pause, a flicker of amusement. Then, light, Jaster curls his hand over John's, slotting their fingers together. Gently, he pulls John's hand away, then forward, and lays a feather-like kiss against his palm beneath their tangled fingers. "I suppose," he says, with good humor, "I underestimated how little a marriage certificate from Mandalorian space would affect you. But with marriage forbidden to the Jedi..." John tips his head. "We don't marry, on the whole. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen on missions, or for cover, or by accident." Jaster pauses, blinks. "By accident," he repeats. John very carefully doesn't smile. "Madam New handles most of the temple records," he says. "She complained about it to me once." "She deserves every headache the Jedi Order can provide," Jaster says precisely, but he's watching John, something soft in his expression. He raises John's hand again, kisses his palm, his knuckles, then leans in and rests their foreheads together. He's so close, so warm, that John can't think of anything else, and the heat of his mouth is inside John's skin, held dear. "I should tell Miles what I saw," John says quietly, though the last thing in the world he wants right now is to pull away. Jaster smiles, turns his hand so he's gripping John's palm to palm, and then tucks John's arm through his own, pulling him right against his side. "I believe this is a story I would be very interested to hear," he agrees, and the fact that he isn't leaving, isn't pulling away, makes John feel warm all the way through to the core. End of chapter 18.